that came with all of this. And now she said that when she's talking about that section of the river, she doesn't have to have so much pain with that section of the river. Now she has these memories of joy and these memories of triumph and these memories of celebration that she gets to share with her future kids and grandkids and all of those things. And I think that's just really special. I heard that a lot from a lot of the different youth, was how excited they are to share these stories with their kids and with their grandkids in the future. Like, this is incredible work, and to know that these kids got to experience this at such a young age, and to imagine where they're going to be when they're 30 or when they're 40, you know, like, these are future tribal chairmen, tribal chairs and leaders of their communities. And what an amazing opportunity to have that experience and to help shift that whole new narrative and to move forward in a good way, you know, and to not have to worry about all of these issues that they've had to worry about for the past multi-generations, you know, for the past over 100 years. And that, like, my biggest takeaway from the story is just the celebration of it all, and the solidarity, and just the happiness and the joy. And that's just so beautiful.
Is there anything else you want to mention?
I would just love to add that we would love for people to read our work, and you could visit all of that stuff at _spelledout.news, UNDERSCORE.news. And yeah, follow us on all of the different social media platforms to keep in contact with us. And if you ever have any story ideas, definitely send them our way. Kenny Aon.
You've been listening to an interview with _ Native News reporter Jarrett Work on his article about the historic Indigenous youth-led descent of the 300-mile Klamath River since it was undammed. You've been listening to a special edition of the KBOO Evening News, the best of 2025. We've been taking a look back at some notable reporting and interviews from the last year. My thanks to the folks who participated in these interviews, sharing the important work that they are doing in the community. And many thanks to the listeners and members who support this unique radio station and our new show. We are proud to bring you local volunteer-produced news every weekday. If you would like to support KBOO in the evening news, you can donate today at kboo.fm/give or text KBOO, KBOO, to 44321. Thanks for listening. For the KBOO Evening News, I'm Hannah Francis.
You got friends in me.
Hello, this is Daffodil. You're listening to Community Radio KBOO Portland.
Got troubles. I got them too. There isn't anything I wouldn't do for you. We stick together, can say it through. Cause you got friends.
Support for KBOO comes from its members and from the Bureau of Labor and Industry's Child Care for Construction in partnership with Business Oregon, working to support those caring for children of journey workers in Oregon, even families and friends. More info at oregon.gov/BOLI/apprenticeship under the link Financial Assistance for Registered Apprentices.
To you, the 9-to-5-er, just making your way home. To you, the all-night driver, out in your cab alone. To you, waiting for lunch break, as the minutes drag so slow. Take courage, turn the volume up, it's Labor Radio.
Good evening, and welcome to Labor Radio. Of the working class, by the working class, for the working class. I'm Laura Wadlin, here with my co-host, Jamie Partridge. Hey, Jamie.
Hey, Laura.
Our guests this evening are Adam Oyster Sands and Lauren McCartney of BEA, the Beaverton Education Association. BEA is a local of the National Education Association, and it represents about 3,000 certified educators, including substitutes, in the Beaverton School District. Adam teaches language arts at Westview High School, and Lauren teaches English language development at Meadow Park and Tumwater Middle Schools. Thanks for joining us, Adam and Lauren.
It's great to be here.
Yeah, thank you for having us.
Recently, Adam and Lauren announced they are running on a slate for union office. This will be the first major contested election in years. Adam is running for president and Lauren is running for vice president. The slate represents their newly formed caucus, BEAU, or BO, Beaverton Education Association United. Reform caucuses in unions are often seen as threatening to existing leadership, especially when the caucus runs for union office. But reform caucuses have been instrumental in transforming unions, both at the local, state, and national level, into open, member-driven, militant, and community-oriented ones. We've seen this among teachers, such as in Chicago and LA, in the United Auto Workers, in the Teamsters, and the News Guild, to name a few. Both of us co-hosting this program, Jamie and I, are active in reform caucuses in our unions. Adam and Lauren, first tell us about BEA and Beaverton Schools. What are the major issues for your members and your students?
Yeah, Laura. Some of the big issues obviously are ICE and our students and staff members' safety and protection in and out of school around the community, making sure that we have a plan that keeps everyone safe. School funding is at the forefront of members' minds today, especially with the cuts in the federal government. And then even our state, you know, our governor has made some hints that maybe school funding at the state level is also not going to increase at a level that we really need. And so that has a major impact on our class size and caseload. And then our members are very concerned about issues of shared decision making, making sure that they have a voice within the district. We're having a new superintendent come in next year. And so we really want to make sure that whoever that is, that they bring in members with the changes that they make. But we also want to make sure that our members have a voice at the union level as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And some issues that members have been talking about for a while, but also recently, are class sizes and special education caseloads and working conditions.
So you've told us a lot about your vision for the union. Does your slate have a platform? Like, how are you putting yourselves out to the members?
Yeah, we kind of have four or five different things we're really pushing in our campaign out to members. We're really interested in building member power and engagement. That idea of solidarity is kind of at the heart of everything we do. We're 3,000 members strong, plus, but we're 50 plus work sites, grades pre-K through early college, including then, you know, like as counselors and SLPs and district level TOSAs, like such a variety of educators that are under the BEA heading that it takes leadership to go to those work sites and engage with the rank and file member one-on-one and say, hey, you have power when you stand with this member. The elementary school teacher has power when the high school teacher comes and stands with them to get that plan time equity that they need. And so that's at the heart of what we're doing is member engagement. Transparency, as Lauren mentioned earlier, the idea that we need to be in a democratic system, we need to be open with our members about how decisions are being made at the union level, how resources are being allocated. As the BEA treasurer, I know how every single dollar is being spent. And making sure that our members understand why we're choosing to spend their dues in the way that we're choosing to spend their dues, why leadership is spending the time in the way that they're spending their time. Then we're really focused on organizing and that authentic partnership, not just organizing within the union, but organizing within the larger Beaverton community and really, really shoring up some of those partnerships, not in a transactional way, not as in a, oh, we need you to help us get a contract, but as in a way of saying, hey, how can we work together to make the community that our students and our staff deserve it to be? And then social justice is at the heart of what we're doing as well, really focusing, trying to get back. Like BEA had a really good equity focus for a few years there, and then COVID kind of hit, and we seem to have maybe taken a step back on some of those social justice issues. And I know Lauren and I want to definitely get us back on that focal track.
Yeah, I think an important issue for me is, you know, we talk a lot about how our working conditions are the learning conditions of our students, but also the community conditions, like the living conditions of our students, also affects the learning conditions. We're not a silo, education isn't a silo and can't be responsible for fixing our whole community, you know? And so I think we need to look at that as a union and, you know, what does that mean for us as union members and the work we could be doing?
If you've just tuned in, this is Labor Radio, Portland, Oregon, 90.7 FM. You've been listening to Adam Oyster Sands and Lauren McCartney of the Beaverton Education Association. If you find this useful, if it helps you on your way, consider donating to our community-sponsored, non-corporate, listener-supported radio station. Go to kboo.fm and make a donation.
I was curious to hear what social justice issues you thought were priorities in addressing, as you mentioned just a moment ago.
I think regarding social justice and equity, equity is part of that. Right now, you know, what's going on with ICE, that's a huge equity issue because we have some schools where there's more Latino students, and they're being directly impacted by this. Like their students, I was surprised. Vos is in an elementary school that is south of my school where I work, and I didn't even realize they were being severely impacted. There's a teacher there, and she just spoke at a town hall in Beaverton about ICE, and I just didn't know what was going on down there, you know. And it's not literally, it's not that far from where I work, but it feels that way. Especially with the Supreme Court, you know, saying it's okay to racially profile people and judge people based on the language they're speaking in order to stop them. And that this is a huge equity issue. And back during the Black Lives Matter movement, when equity was a big issue in our district, like our district was taking it seriously and our union took it seriously, we passed a resolution in support of equity and racial justice in our union. And right now, the issue with ICE is a huge equity issue. And so we need to be taking that seriously and being like, how can we live up to this resolution as a union? In our district, regarding other social justice issues, it's looking at special education caseloads and working conditions for our special education teachers and how our SPED students brought in as equal members of our school communities is an issue. Also looking at graduation rates of students of color, but also looking at different groups, different ethnic and racial groups, and looking at that data. But then what changes are we going to be making with our teaching practices and our curriculum to actually support those students? Because we do, well, at Meadow Park anyway, we have talked about how our Latino students aren't doing as well as our other students, even though we have a dual language program where students come in and they have two classes each year that are all taught in Spanish. And then they, in their classes that are dual language classes but facilitated in English, we do different activities and strategies to help bridge the language so that in whether you're in a dual language class that's facilitated in English or Spanish, you're working to build those that bridge between the languages. So students build both repertoires in English and Spanish and use those. But what does that mean for our school? Like, what do we need to change in order to make it so the graduation rates of our Latino students isn't disproportionately lower than other students.
Yeah. One area, yeah, the very important things that, again, increasing shared decision-making, like let our members have voices in what the district is doing. And then also making a stand for our LGBTQ plus and our trans community as they are in the crosshairs at the national level, especially with the transgender athletes, bans that are taking place, and even the Democratic Party voting to support some of these bills going through in the House and in the Senate. And so just letting our students and staff who identify as trans or as part of the LGBTQ plus community know that we're here to support them, to make sure that they also feel safe and secure and that they have access to the things that they need to have access to. Last February, right after we finished that bargain, right after the current administration came into office and then immediately started attacking the transgender community. I went to my principal of my school and I asked him to make a statement of support for our LGBTQ plus students. I work with the Queer Student Union at Westview, and a lot of the students were very scared, very afraid of their future and what this new administration meant for them. And our principal kind of hemmed and hawed and was waiting for the district to make a statement. And then I was like, well, I don't need to wait for you. So I wrote a resolution myself and brought it to the union, to the to our RA, and RA passed it unanimously. And we took a stand instead of waiting on the district. So making sure that we can still remember that we represent a very diverse community in Beaverton, and it's our duty to take a stand, especially as a white man. It's definitely my responsibility to use my privilege to elevate the voices and the issues of those people who don't have that same privilege as me, for sure.
What are the biggest differences between you and your opponents in this race for union office?
First off, the current leadership are very knowledgeable. There's a place for our current president and vice president in BEA. They have a lot of experience. They have a lot of institutional knowledge that is necessary for us to be able to push our work forward as a union. But I think the biggest difference is they're working under what we call a service model of leadership, which has been BEA's kind of bread and butter for as long as BEA's been around. And service model just means if a member has a problem, they tell their building rep, the building rep tells their executive board liaison, the executive board liaison gives that to the president or the vice president, and then the vice president and president take that to the district and they have some closed door meeting and hope that the situation gets worked out. Lauren and I are focused more on transforming BEA to what we call an organizing model, where when the member has an issue, instead of rolling the problem uphill and hoping that leadership solves it magically behind the scenes, that members realize that they have power to organize, to take a stand for themselves and for their students, and so that we can have worksite specific campaigns as well as district-wide campaigns so that the change can come through us, who has the power to bring that change.
Yeah, I was a member on leave, hired as an organizer for about 3 months through an NEA, National Education Association grant, for a community schools campaign. And community schools is a really great idea for building a shared decision-making structure in a school, at a school site, where families, the administration, so the principals, vice principals of a school, the educators and community groups all come together to, you know, identify what are the needs of the students and what can we do to help address those needs together. So there's shared decision-making at the school. And There was a resolution passed with BEA that they wanted to work on a community schools campaign. And so I was hired as an organizer. And I was very excited about this, to build member engagement and build community partnerships and move forward with this campaign. It was a great experience. I just really enjoyed working with our elected leaders and our UNISERVs, who are Oregon Education Association staff, who are assigned. There's a few assigned to each local in Oregon that help with like legal issues and organizing at each local union. And so it was an excellent experience. But I did see times where it seemed to me like fear or something would get in the way of organizing or really opening doors for members. I think there was a lot of talk of wanting to open doors for members to come in and meet in our space often, like have a thriving union space where members are coming in and working, collaborating to address their issues. But sometimes doors would close due to that. And I think internally, if we are more organized, like we have more of a strategic plan developed with members and families and community groups to identify what are our short-term, long-term goals and really clarify what are the roles of the different people, as I mentioned earlier, what are the roles of a vice president, president, what are the roles of executive board members, of members in general, what roles can we each play to move that vision forward? And that can, I think, really help members feel success when there is clarity on, well, what should I be doing if I'm in this committee? What should I be doing? And what are our wins? You know, what are our challenges? And how do we as an organization deal when there are disagreements? Because there's going to be disagreements. Like, organizing can be messy a lot of times because, you know, you're trying out new things. You're like, oh, look at, you know, this, you know, you're looking at long-term problems, but also when short-term problems come up, you know, how can we take action together? And it's very similar to when you're in the classroom. When you're teaching in the classroom, a really powerful strategy is to, like, provide the structure for kids to learn something new or grapple with a question, but then provide the structure for students to build their skills, but also for them to decide answers, you know, determine what answers might work for that. And so just as in the classroom, it can be really powerful to really trust your students to be able to handle something complex. I think that can be really transformative for our union. If we can have really solid, democratic, and transparent structures and processes that really support members, their ability to come together and brainstorm and act on really important issues that they care about.
So how is the existing leadership reacting to the formation of your caucus and your slate?
Happened. And it goes back to kind of what Lauren was saying. Organizing is not easy. Service model is easier than organizing, because organizing takes work, because organizing at the heart of it is relationship building. And it takes effort to go to somebody and build that relationship, to find that common ground, to figure it, to like let go of some of your ego that says, I know how to do this, but to actually listen to what other people are saying, to listen to what their ideas are, and try to figure out how you can work together for the good of the union as a whole. And that's difficult work. And I'm not sure leadership has currently done that work to the level that maybe is necessary to fully bring Bo in. But I am excited that Bo is continuing to put pressure on the union to make some of these changes.
Yeah, and that's not the first time there's been a situation like that where there's been an issue or a group of members who've been really passionate about something, or union leadership hasn't taken the opportunity to be like, oh, well, why don't we bring you in and let's talk about this? Or maybe we should have a town hall about this, because it seems like many members are interested. And there are a lot of opportunities for doing that. And we would like to see our union be able to do that, because that's how we can build our power. It's opportunities to engage members, engage community groups, and really build our power.
How did Bo end up forming as a caucus, and what have you all been doing together other than running for union office?
I think, Adam, do you remember? Bo formed a few years ago. I remember I joined about a year ago. I got in touch with a member who I had been in touch with during the Black Lives Matter movement, when our district was doing a lot of trainings and a lot of work around equity. We were in some same meetings for that, and then we got back in touch. And she told me about that there were other members who had some similar concerns that I had had. Myself, from being a member on leave as an organizer for about 3 months, I did have some concerns about, like, the lack of internal organization and strategic planning or strategic visioning, as well as I wanted our union to open more doors to members. And that's what other people had wanted. And then we formed Bo out of that.
Yeah, I think a lot of the early Bo members were part of our CAT team during the last bargain. And so they were kind of our lead organizers around the bargain and the negotiation. Contract action team is our CAT team. And some of those Bo members got, for lack of a better term, frustrated with union leadership around the organizing side of the bargain. Many people that were in the CAT wanted to see a little more proactive organizing happening. to have a little bit stronger connection between the bargaining team and the organizing team, because there was quite a disconnect between those two. And I think many of the BOW members saw kind of a missed opportunity, especially with the amount of member engagement we got around that negotiation and going into mediation. I think BOW saw a missed opportunity that our union could have taken to really harness that energy into the transition to this organizing model. So those CAP members took it upon themselves to kind of form this caucus in order to do that work to kind of push BEA for those changes that they felt like were missing during that last negotiation cycle.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and BOW has been, we've been doing work around proposing bylaw changes to make our processes more democratic. Adam, do you want to speak to
So like bylaws are a big deal. We formulate a bylaw committee every year, and last spring our president put a call for bylaw recommendations, and BOW organized hard and put out a lot of bylaw and policy changes. And that committee went from having like three or four people, which were usually just the officers, to having 30 people on the bylaw committee. And the bylaw committee met one time over the summer and didn't actually take up any of those bylaw suggestions, and then has not yet convened this year. And so I'm not sure if that is leadership struggling again to kind of figure out how to incorporate these new ideas and this new energy into the existing structures, or making, maybe they're not making space for some of these new ideas. But some of those bylaws are around more transparency, opening up meetings to members. So they're around how we do appointments to positions. There's some bylaw changes around like just term limits for elected offices, these kind of things, just really trying to become, make BEA a more democratic organization. But really the work I think BOW does that's so exciting is grassroots organizing. Mm-hmm. They're really working hard to get into as many work sites as they can and recruit rank and file members to join the caucus. And that grassroots organizing is really at the heart of what I'm excited about working with them on, whether as president of BEA or as treasurer, or if I go back to being a rank and file member for sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then along with that, in response to members and what members are curious about or wanting more information about, we've worked with BEA to host Rethinking Schools and Bill Bigelow to come and talk about the Rethinking Schools publication, I think is Teaching About Palestine.
Teaching Palestine.
Thank you, Adam. And hosting a workshop on that for educators who are curious about what resources are out there and what, as an educator, like what am I, what should, what is something I could be doing in my class to support students with this issue. And then also pushing our union to have the immigrant rights working group and do Migra Watch trainings, and whether those trainings are in partnership with an organization or if we host trainings ourselves, you know, just bringing up the issues that educators are talking about and issues educators are wanting more information about. So bringing that up to our union.
So your election is coming up in February. What are you doing to campaign and how's that going?
Yeah, so Lauren and I sent out an announcement announcing our campaign, our candidacy, right before winter break last week to the entire district so that it's out there, everyone's aware. We're scheduling meetings and listening sessions at work sites across the district, reaching out to building reps to say, hey, can we come visit you in January and really give a little bit about our vision, but I'm real interested in listening to what the members at those work sites want from BEA leadership. What do they need? We sent out a survey to members to ask, hey, what are you looking for in BEA leadership? And it's been really exciting to see some members respond to that. But really, we have over 50 work sites in our union. Lauren and I are both full-time educators in the classroom. And so we're going to try our best to get to as many of those work sites as we can between now and February. The reality is we're probably not going to be able to make it to every single worksite. And so building a coalition of building reps and rank and file members at every worksite who can kind of push our message and our vision and who can align with us and that we can align with them to really say this is what we want BEA to be, that's our strongest campaign tactic, is really just tapping into that grassroots organizing and getting the members in the buildings to stand up and speak for us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think already in our campaign, you know, members can give input through a survey. We're having individual conversations with people now, but then we'll be having listening sessions and going to different sites to get input as well. And then, you know, collaborating with BO members and other educators or other colleagues who might want to talk with others as well. So just really gathering input. And that's so far, I mean, it's been a week or so since we've announced. And it's been really interesting to hear that members would like to see district, like president, vice president, union president and vice president in their buildings and coming to talk to members. I've heard that a few times. One member is on our professional development committee, which is something we won a few years ago, is having many members collaborating with district administrators in developing our plan for professional development in our district. And it was so great. The member was telling me these wins they've recently had in the PD committee. And I was like, I had no idea. Like, we should be celebrating this. This is amazing, especially because not last spring, but the spring before, towards the end of the school year, district admin came to our members who are on the PD committee and basically presented the model of PD, and it disregarded a lot of what our members told them. And the members I talked to on that committee were like almost crying. And they were just like, that was really disheartening to see that all the work we put in all year was just pushed aside. And again, I knew that because I was an organizer on leave. Like, I wouldn't have known that if I was rank and file member. And that's like, that's really important. Especially if in our, you know, especially if we're proposing to have class size committees or other committees, knowing that the district just did that to our PD community, to our members, you know, it's really hard to see that happen and then not know about it. And so we just really need to be celebrating our wins, as well as talking about our goals and the hardships we're facing and how we're